Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
What up, though?
Not the what up, though. We have the alternate intro for today. Happy Thursday. Happy tourney day, tourney weekend, I suppose, by the time people get to listen to this one. Hope you are excited for college hoops. I am going to be probably on the other end of the spectrum for the quality of hoops on the men's side in particular, but fun time of the year for everyone. I hope you all enjoy. Going to get into some news items and still going to ask some questions from the Dunker Spot mailbag. So for those who send in questions, thank you for doing so. If you ever have basketball thoughts, basketball questions, or what have you, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That is dunkerspot@yahoo.com. First, on the W side, some news trickling in earlier in the morning. The Indiana Fever waving forward Victoria Vivians, averaged 5 points, 3 boards, and an assist last season. Did not shoot particularly well from three. That is one of the calling cards for her offensively. So hoping for a bounce back moving forward. She did start in 14 of her 38 games last year. In those starts, averaged 7 points, 4 boards, and 2 assists. So curious to see where she ends up landing. I think there are still some teams out there that could use some extra forward depth if they want to take a flyer on Victoria Vivians. Like, I would look at either Chicago or Phoenix in particular. If they want to add a depth piece, get some shooting, be able to spread the offense in smaller units, feels like a natural fit there. I didn't know if you had any Victoria Vivians thoughts, but just want to sprinkle that one in very quickly. But if not, on the NBA side, we got some transaction news and some retirement news. I, for one, was very confused by the Otto Porter Jr. dealings earlier this month. Where he was get traded to Utah as part of the Toronto deal, doesn't play, waiting on buyout news. The buyout doesn't come. He's waived a few days after the playoff deadline. I was like, hey, what's going on here? And then Otto Porter Jr. announced his retirement and essentially said his body isn't holding up the way that he would like for it to. He doesn't feel like he can produce the way that he wants to. He's called it an end. So he finished his career averaging 10 points per game, 4.9 rebounds, 1.5 assists, and a little over a steal. During his 11-year career, shot 40% from three for his career. And as you likely remember, he won a title with the Golden State Warriors as an important depth piece during the 2021-22 season. 8 points, 6 boards, an assist and a half, and over a steal with the Warriors. And the Warriors had a plus 7.5 net rating in over 1,700 minutes that Porter Jr. was on the floor. So a salute to Otto Porter Jr. Wish him the best moving forward. Some 10-day contracts, excuse me. That we missed earlier this week. Marcus Morris signing with the Cavs. He has played 2 games at this point, 18 points in 36 minutes. He's 5 of 7 from three through his first two games. And the Cavs have won those minutes by 7 points. So we're keeping an eye on Mr. Morris. It is always Marcus Morris time, no matter where he is. And Isaiah Thomas back to the Phoenix Suns, signed a 10-day. Technically made his debut last night in the Suns win over the Philadelphia 76ers, played the roughly last 2 minutes of that one. So we'll see if the role rises at all throughout the duration of that contract. Did you have any Morris or Isaiah Thomas thoughts?
One shout out to Otto Porter Jr. For being able to put that career together, be able to go out to a degree when he wanted to. Obviously, the body doesn't cooperate, but a salute to him. Marcus Morris in Cleveland. I think it makes a lot of sense, especially considering Mobley's out, injuries, George Niang starting. Let's get some of that still on the bench. I'm intrigued by the Marcus Morris-Tristan Thompson combo. I'm sure you are too, but that's one of those fun things to monitor that could help them in the playoffs. And then it's nice to see Isaiah Thomas get that opportunity and to be able to go to the G League and perform the way that he did. And now to at least get back to the league on a 10-day with Phoenix. That's just good to see. So salute to all involved.
There we go. And boy, was Isaiah Thomas cooking in the G League. Multiple 30-point games. Still looks like he can get to his spots, pull up and raise whenever he wants to. So we'll see what the Phoenix run again is going to look like for him. On the injury front, a couple of rookies out for the year now. Bilal Coulibaly with a wrist fracture finishes his rookie campaign, 63 games, 8.4 points, 4.1 rebounds, a shade under 2 assists, and roughly a steal and a block per game in those 63 games. Shot 35% from three. So some intrigue there. We've talked about some of the drives for him, some of the pick and roll usage on either end. So curious to see how the Wizards are able to build things out for him moving forward. Hate that a season ends like this, but a successful rookie campaign, in my opinion. And Asar Thompson dealing with a clot issue, excuse me. He's also going to be out for the year for the Detroit Pistons. So he finishes his rookie campaign, averaging 8.8 points per game, 6.4 rebounds, two of those being of the offensive variety, two assists, 1.1 steals, and roughly a block per game. Did you have any loose rookie thoughts on Bilal or Asar? Anything that's popped for you before they went down, or just overall thoughts on their rookie year?
I thought they had very solid rookie years. I think they showed the versatility that they have for both of their teams. I think for Bilal, being able to showcase the drives on top of the shooting, being able to showcase flashes of that. The defense obviously spoke for itself. That's a plus. I think with Asar, it was fun to see, once they were able to make some changes roster-wise, how they could use him in different ways and kind of unlock him with different pairings. So it's a shame that he's going to be out, but hopefully he's healthy. That's the number one priority. Mm-hmm. But you have to be excited about their future if you're those teams and know that they can produce and there's probably more of a role for them next year. I think with the Asar in Detroit, that should be really fun to see how they unlock his all-around game and how he grows with that unit. But nothing but positive things for the most part. I think they checked a lot of the boxes you expected them to and showed some flashes in other areas.
Yeah, I think versatility seems to be the name of this rookie class in general. And so those two are, I think, pretty loud examples of all the different things they can do. We naturally monitored the shot with both of those guys, but particularly Asar, as that was a big question with him coming into the draft. So we'll see how that continues to develop. But even with him, the usage as a screener perking up in Detroit as he got more consistent playing time, we've already seen what kind of potential he can have defensively. The guy can switch all over the place. He already proved to be one of the better perimeter defenders in the sport in year one. So I'm very excited to see what year two is going to look like as he has more of the institutional knowledge, as he gets stronger, as we see some of the softer fouls be eliminated from the diet there as he's just getting used to NBA speed. I am very excited to watch both of these players grow. Other injury news. You mentioned a little bit earlier, Evan Mobley's out. Donovan Mitchell was out, came back, and is now out again. So we will keep eyes on what's happening with him in Cleveland. Christian Wood, as it was announced, having knee surgery. He's going to be out for several weeks, was the wording, I believe, from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN. So not sure if that means he is completely out for the season, but he is at the very least going to be out for the next little bit. So that is a Lakers depth piece that will not be available. Gabe Vincent maybe making his return by the end of the regular season. His status was a little bit up in the air. He's been out for a while, so we will keep eyes on that one. And then lastly, to move away from the injury front, this was a memo that came in late last week. We didn't get to it on the earlier episode of the pod this week. We try to stay away from ref talk for very obvious reasons. We just want to talk about what's happening on the court, talk about the basketball. But we have seen a pretty stark drop in foul calls. We've seen a stark drop in scoring, which led to a memo being sent out around to teams from the league office saying, hey, we haven't told these guys to just limit scoring. There are some points of emphasis that we want to hammer home more in terms of how things are being called and what offensive players are doing to, quote unquote, trick defenders into getting called for fouls and things of that nature. Have you noticed, and you're threading everything, you're watching everything, have you noticed a shift in how the game feels at all? Has that been on your register at all? Or has that registered for you at all?
Nakai, you got to know your personnel. You're asking the wrong guy. Yeah. I think there's been some really strong work out there, so I don't want to just slide that to the side. To me, this does just feel like the typical cycle of officiating to a degree, where you have the points of emphasis to start the year. The points of emphasis are hammered. As the year goes on, it kind of slows down and trickles, and things start to loosen up as you get closer to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen that almost every time for the last few years, where something that may have worked during the regular season doesn't have the same impact in the playoffs because the games are officiated differently. I'm sure for players, you're probably just looking for a level of consistency, which can be tough throughout that journey. Mm-hmm. If certain things are now an automatic and then sometimes they're not, and then certain players get certain things, and that gets tricky and tough. But this is the time of year where things start to open up, and maybe it's because the scoring was so high and that it feels significant. And again, I don't want to just slide it to the side and ignore it, but to me, this just feels like basketball. We're getting ready for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would ask you, what do you think? Do you feel or see something different?
I think for me, it does feel like a lot more contact is being let go. And so it's not a surprise to me that as you get into like the article that was sent out, and, some of our other Twitter followers have put out graphics to showcase what the foul numbers looked like before the All-Star break, what's looked like post-All-Star break, things like that. Seeing the numbers attached, it doesn't surprise me at all, because it does feel like there's a lot more being let go on drives. There's a lot more being let go on shot contest at the rim. And even some of the early stuff, fighting over screens, like I'm not seeing as quick of a whistle. So like it does feel like more physicality is being allowed, which I'm fine with. Like I guess for me, and it's funny because I'm literally bringing this up on the pod, but like, I guess I don't want this to become like the story of the second half. Like I do think teams are ramping up to the playoffs, to your, you know, to your point. And so we are seeing, you know, Russ being a little bit looser with it, but also just the teams themselves. Like we're seeing shorter rotations. We are seeing more specific game plans and specific matchups. So like, I think there is like a general ramp up that's happening. And so that might be part of why it feels a little more difficult to score. Teams are keying in a little bit more on things as they kind of gear up for playoff prep and things like that. And you toss in the fact that some of these points of emphasis may be being hammered more again. It makes sense that we're seeing a lot fewer fouls and stuff. But like, I haven't had, like my level of enjoyment watching hasn't gone down at all.
I can't get there with the ref stuff. Cause I feel like you just end up being mad either way. Like, hey, this is ridiculous. Why are you calling this? Then they flip it. And hey, this is ridiculous. Why aren't you calling this? And I just feel like it's not a fun way to watch basketball, in my opinion. For me, at least.
It is a tennis match that you do not enjoy.
No, I mean, look, man, they're humans. And the humans make errors. And I was told a long time ago by my dad, look, you're never going to be able to control the refs. So you just got to go play. And I was like, all right, makes sense.
And there you go. So I will say just quickly, just put a bow on this. Like if this is going to be the style, which again, I don't have any like real issues with, like I'm cool with more stuff being allowed, more physical challenges, stuff like that. I do hope that it's just this for the rest of the year versus we get maybe like a quicker whistle in round one and stuff like that. Like to your consistency point, I just want to see that. If it's going to be loose, then let it be loose. If it's going to be tight, then let it be tight. That's just kind of where I am with that. And we can cap it there. Let's get into this Dunker Spot mailbag. Once again, if you have basketball questions for us at any time, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That is dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Our first question is going to come from John, who says, not sure if you've touched on this before, but was curious if you prefer to address positional or skill-based needs with specific additions that fit those glaring problems, or are you generally okay with simply having a cluster of different talents and figuring out how to put those pieces together over time? For example, San Antonio needing wing depth or shooting. Do you prefer a multifaceted offensive piece with defensive problems or more specific skill sets that will most likely alleviate some problems immediately? And that goes for teams around the league.
I think for me, when it comes to this question, and good question, John, it depends on the scenario and the situation of your specific team. So you obviously would love to address your positional needs, but you're not going to be able to fill every gap to 10 out of 10. And it also comes down to knowing who you are as a team and knowing what you have as a unit. And for me, my mind goes to where are you at in the process as a team? Are you contending for a championship? Are you trying to move to the next level? Are you a team where this might be your year, but you're trying to figure out how to get to that next step or that next phase? We kind of see that go on throughout the league. And then do you have proof of concept? Do you have a specific identity? Have you had success with that identity? I think those are all really important pieces to think about context-wise. So my mind goes to, I know you mentioned San Antonio, but like if you're lower on that tier and you're a team that is struggling or trying to be in that talent acquisition mode and you need to see what guys can do and what they can't do and see who goes with you to the next part of the journey, I don't really have a problem with having a little bit more depth at the same position to some of those, you know, cluster of different talents that you were speaking of. And you're going to allow guys to kind of play their way in, play their way out, see what they have and see what you need. I think that's where it goes. I think it gets tricky because while you might have what looks like a glaring weakness or a need, you also do need to, as an organization and as a team, see what you have and who you are to know what's going to be needed going forward. And context can change things. Since we're talking about San Antonio, right? Mm-hmm. How you felt about Keldon Johnson last year might change this year. Is that Keldon Johnson or the fact that we have Victor Wembanyama? Mm-hmm. And like, I don't think that's disrespect to Keldon, who has shown what he can do, but there's a little bit of a shift with your team, with your focus, with what you're trying to accomplish. Let's say you're a team like Portland, you know what Matisse Thybulle can do and help your team, right? Mm-hmm. Are you in the best scenario to have that enhance and impact your team to the best degree? And can you now balance what he does with how much can we see from Tumani Kamara? How much can we see from Chris Murray? What do they do well? Who do they play well with? So you kind of have to balance that out to a degree mm-hmm. where you need to A, build your team up, and B, see what these guys can do. You know, I point to Orlando, Nikias, and correct me if I'm wrong, it looked like for the longest time we had conversations and we're like, boys, a lot of guards, right? Mm-hmm. How's that going to work out? And I think you might still have some questions, but now it's more like, okay, do they have enough shooting? Because you look at the growth of Paolo Banchero, you look at the growth of Franz, and you can see the vision where those guards can now just be themselves to a degree mm-hmm. and not have to carry the weight of making every single play. So while they're different, Cole Anthony's going to give you more of a scoring punch. Markelle Fultz give you the playmaking. Anthony Black give you the defense, knows his role. Those guys can now slot in differently than if, hey, you have to make every single play. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more of a variety type deal. And then you could be like a top tier team like Boston and have a need. But do we really need to fill it? Mm-hmm. How do we go about filling it? Or do we just trust what we have in-house? Mm-hmm. Basically, the only thing for me is you want to have versatility. I don't necessarily want to have two or three of the same type of player. Because then it's just redundant. Mm. So hopefully I answered that question, John.
Yeah, I think that was good stuff. And like, I love that you brought up, again, what is the context of where you are as a team and as an organization? Because I think that kind of changes what you're going after or how specific you're being after. I feel like every draft cycle we have to, do you draft best player available or do you draft for need? And depending on where you are in the program, like the needle probably goes to either direction. Like I think back to the conversation we had very early in the pod history, when Houston had, you know, when Houston had their draft, they had like four picks in the top 40 or whatever it was. And my initial thought was, I like all of these dudes. Are all of these guys going to be able to hit based on where they are and what you already had on the roster and stuff like that? But I think because of where Houston was, they felt more comfortable taking that bet. Like, okay, let's just get the talent in here. If they're good, they're going to shine. If not, then fine. But we're very early in the process. We can afford to take these gambles versus let's get Jalen Green. Okay, now let's try to find a traditional point guard. Now we're going to try to find a shooter. And now we're going to try to find, you know, being more, you know, specific in what you're going after. So I think I'm with you, like teams at the bottom can afford to take those kind of talent swings. Like it's a similar conversation that we've had about Detroit and where you can argue that, you know, in the front court in particular, there's been a lot of overlap in who they're requiring. But they're very much just trying to find talent at this point. They're not trying to build out a surefire contender yet. They want to get there. But right now, we're in stage one. Let's take some cracks at some of these talented dudes or guys that we think are talented. Let's see if they pop. If they don't, then fine. Like they got Marvin Bagley. They re-signed Marvin Bagley, ultimately decided to trade Marvin Bagley, which we've talked about that on the pod as well. Like that process didn't seem super clean, but you could at least understand where it was coming from. You can kind of judge the results from there, but you at least understand this is what the process is. This is where we are, and this is why we are taking these gambles. So like Detroit's team thought about, I'm glad you brought up Orlando. You brought up the guards. I thought you were going to go to the front court because I think we were also saying, hey, these are a lot of big wings and forwards. How are you playing all of these dudes? Like as much as I love like Chuma Okeke, like how often is he playing right now because of everyone else that they have in the forward room? So it makes sense on that front. I guess like generally, I would like to aim for, if I can get the guy that slots everyone else into place, then I will do that. But it's just recognizing that it's not always that clean. It's not easy to do that. And that's obviously why the players that can fill a bunch of gaps for you go for as much as they do. Like I think about the Knicks trading for OG Anunoby and just how much the defense on and off the ball, the shooting, and you know, just the positional versatility that he allows New York just because of everything that he can do and in the package that it comes in. Like that is I would probably rather have OG than, I guess we can just use that as an example. Like if I only had these two trades on the table, trade for OG Anunoby or get Boyan and Alec Burks to try to fill different roles, just add shooting to the room. Like I'd probably just take OG because he fills more gaps for me versus getting the two, if that makes sense. Now, naturally, the Knicks have traded for all three of those guys, so it's not one to one. But like conceptually, if I can get a guy that just slots into everything or just makes life easier for everyone else, like I would just take the one versus let me get a bunch of different cracks at this. Because, I mean, to Steve's point, the versatility is important. But if one guy can unlock a bunch of versatility elsewhere versus let me get two or three dudes and see if I can mix and match from there, who can pop a different lineup. Like, I'll probably just aim for the one. So I think that's where I would land on that front.
You also have to be careful when you're saying, hey, we need to fill a specific need, because you can't just copy and paste what one player is somewhere and assume that's going to be the same thing with you. And that's not a disrespect to the talent, just the context changes. Yeah. So if you have one player that has success somewhere and you're thinking, hey, we need this, and it doesn't hit the same, now you're in the same boat and you don't have much behind it because you went to go fill a need. Mm-hmm. You know, I think as you were talking, my mind went to Cleveland, right? After that playoff series, very clear they needed some more shooting and a little bit more lineup versatility. You get Max Strus, you get George Niang, even if the results are uneven at times, more so probably for Niang shooting wise, you at least have someone who is a threat and you have more combinations you can put together so that helps elevate your team. So I think it's about having your concepts and knowing who you are. And I think you made a really good point as far as bringing up Houston and guys playing their way in and out. It made my mind go to Oklahoma City, to where you have a concept of what you want and the type of players you want, and you are going to find those players. And so you kind of have the combination of, we're filling a need, but we also have this depth. We have different talents, and the cream's going to rise to the top. And you kind of have these moments where, and I hate to say it because it's going to sound bad, sometimes guys are a concept or they're an idea. Mm-hmm. And it's like, hey, this is good. Can we get something that's better than that version? Like throwing out JRE at the five, turning into Jalen Williams at the five, turning into, hey, maybe we just don't need a traditional five. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If we just need y'all to screen and space and then cut sometimes, maybe we can get this from a big wing. That's better.
So that's kind of where it goes. Like, I look at Charlotte right now, influx of talent. Maybe this gives them an idea going forward. So maybe we don't need Grant Williams, no disrespect again, but maybe that type of player works next to XYZ, mm-hmm. You know? So I think team building wise, it can kind of get a little deeper there.
Fun questions, some fun answers. At least we hope that the answers are fun for you. Next, we have a two-pack from Grizzlies Film, Adam Pike, I believe is how you say the last name. If not, please correct me. Question number one, do NBA teams in general track the efficiency of different actions they run through the season, through games? And if they do, do they adjust through the season to remove or add elements, drop, switch, zone beaters, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, you can go really deep with that kind of stuff. The type of actions you run, when you started the set, number of passes, shot clock, all that good stuff. You can go in there. I think for me, it's always been something where it's not just to see how effective that set is. It might also to track how many times you're running it. Are you leaning on it too much? Are teams figuring it out? And you might not remove it completely, but you might look to tweak it or tweak when you use it or who you use it against. If you see, you know, more teams are putting two on the ball, that's going to shift kind of some of the things you run spacing wise to try and take advantage of that versus a team that's just kind of playing drop. And, you know, you're going to have teams that are more physical and active, you know, the teams that are more in their base. So it's just kind of an evolution type deal. Mm. But, you know, it's one of those things where with all the misdirection and combination of sets, you might look to disguise that set more or use that set to disguise something else. Mm. So it can kind of get fun in that way.
Okay. And then part two, how do teams go about opening their playbook or implementing new plays through the season?
Well, I mean, you're always tweaking during the season. You're adding different elements. You might see, I mean, it's a copycat league, so you might see something one night and decide, okay, I like this part of it. Let us run that for our team. Or you might go backwards and kind of just pull a set out of the woodworks. You know, every year it's like, hey, you know what? Let's run Hawk. Let's run Floppy into this. Let's run Horns Chet. Like, you just kind of tinker with things and add it. So you might do it as a start of game play or an after timeout play. And now you might have something you can build on conceptually. You also have the sets you started the season out with that teams might be getting hip to, or you're not executing with the same pace, or you have to tweak because of injuries. So you're looking to, okay, how can we get to this? Do we need all of this at the start? Maybe we just get to the end. Different things you can do. And then if guys are playing well, you know, attack matchups, what's our spacing look like? It gets tricky. I think the difference, though, in today's NBA is the spacing and the base and the tempo is so important that your sets are almost like, how do I want to phrase this? They're not necessarily always going to be the major focus point, but they can send you over the top if you're able to combine everything in a really solid way. So it's a little different than before where it was really, really set heavy.
Got you. If I can ask you a quick set question, as in your experience, like how often were you seeing like, make sure I phrase it correctly. Like how often were you seeing like actual new sets being created versus this is something that we already do. We're going to do a slight tweak here, or, hey, this team ran this against us. I like that. Let's crib this or add our own twist to it.
A lot. Happens all the time. You're always evolving because you need to stay fresh because, again, teams are scouting you. So you don't want to just keep running the same thing, or you find something that really works that someone can't beat and you just keep running it. So you're always trying to stay ahead of what defenses are trying to do to you. You know, if a team is trying to front, and now, you know, we talk about this all the time where one team is going to have a game plan that exposes something. Even if they don't win, they might poke and show something that where, hey, this might be a weakness. So now you have to be able to adjust to, okay, teams are looking to switch this pick and roll. How do we now still get to this action? And so you kind of just are developing the counters to make the set stronger. You know what I mean? Like you go back to kind of where there are teams that are switching everything. So you're looking to bait them into getting a smaller guard on your ball handler. And now you make that smaller guard do the screen navigation. So the set might be the same, but you've now tweaked who's involved in it, if that makes sense. And so it's constant evolution. You're constantly working on adding things. It's not something where it's just static. If you're just going to be static playbook-wise, good luck post All-Star break.
Tough. Okay. Appreciate you good, sir. Next question going to come from Dom.
That'll be $15.
Fair enough. Invoice is coming. All right.
Charging.
Got you, people. Dom says, hi, Nikai and Steve. Brought this up in the watch party and wanted to see if anything came of it after further digging. Since the All-Star break, OKC ranks 6th in defensive rebound percentage per cleaning the glass. Is there something schematic that changed? It wouldn't seem to be personnel-based given their trade deadline, but wasn't sure and seemed like it reversed the trend from earlier this season. Thanks and appreciate the awesome analysis.
Dom, well, Nikias is typically our OKC rebounding expert. This is usually not my territory, but I'm going to take this one off the glass, bud.
I get it.
Thank you. If there's anything I've noticed, it is just OKC feeling like they have more plays where there's 3 or 4 guys in the paint. Mm-hmm. And it kind of feels like that gang rebounding aspect has been emphasized to where we're going to do this as a unit. We're going to make sure we check our guy out, but everyone just needs to come together and do this. So if you look at OKC tape and you see a shot go up, you're going to kind of see them kind of like migrate together in the paint, almost like a magnet effect. It's kind of funny since I ended up watching way too many defensive rebounds of OKC post All-Star break, thanks to this question. But that's one of the things. Now, sometimes that's just a function of their defense with how they help and how they rotate and how they fly around and how they're in position to help on drives. And then you also notice sometimes where they'll have someone else do like a late contest. So there's just bodies in the paint. I think seeing their guys sink off the corner has been a plus for me to where I'm coming in to help on these rebounds. Sometimes the little double teams on box outs, just there's a clear emphasis on, hey, we need to make sure we're doing our part to help out as a team. And even when, you know, it's not necessarily the most physical box outs, but they're going to check their guy and then turn and release to go get the rebound. And it's usually just one guy running out, what feels like these days. I wouldn't say it's new or reinventing the wheel, but it does feel like they're a lot more focused on that portion of the program.
That's really good stuff. I'm glad we were on the same page there. Yeah, it's going to be the convergence of the bodies for me. And like you'll see it across the league where a guy's going to 3-pointer and he'll just run all the way out, try to get the early leak out. Like OKC had a few of those earlier in the year. Like you're not seeing that as often. It feels like their highest guy when the shot goes up is around the 3-point line. So like you're not even getting like the deep outlet. They are converging, trying to gain rebound. So that was probably the biggest film thing. And then looking at some of the numbers, it was kind of funny. Like looking at NBA.com's like box out tracking data, like they're actually boxing out less or they're getting fewer hits. But I guess because there are more bodies there, you're also just getting the people like, all right, cool. Well, I'm not about to fight with all three of y'all. We're just going to get back. Y'all got it. So like maybe that plays a part. And then just looking at who they faced. Their opponents since the All-Star break, Utah, they just played them last night. They played Memphis twice. They played Dallas. They played Indiana. They played Miami, Portland, the Lakers, Phoenix, the Spurs, the Rockets twice, the Wizards, and the Clippers. Only three of those teams rank in the top 10 in offensive rebound rate. So it could also just be a virtue of the teams that we have faced so far, they aren't heavy crash teams to begin with. So that could also play a part in why OKC's numbers are that good, but they are being more intentional about making sure they end possessions. And then even looking at their shot profile, like they are a team that gives up a lot of threes, but a lot of those are coming from the corners. They give up a relatively low percentage of above the break threes in terms of like the total share shots that they allow. And the above the break three number is even lower post All-Star break. So it could also just be a virtue of fewer of those shots means fewer long rebounds. And thus you don't get the wild offensive rebound opportunities there from guys that are still around the perimeter. So like all of that, I feel like can factor in, but yeah, I don't think there has been to Steve's point, there hasn't been like a reinventing of the wheel from OKC. Like it's kind of just kind of hammering down what they already do and doing it better. And that combined with, again, facing teams that aren't crashing super heavy, that may influence that number. But obviously encouraging if OKC could actually solve the defensive rebounding thing, because that's been one of the things that I've been keeping an eye on with the Thunder. Very good defense, very good team overall. It's like, hey, they got to end possessions once they face bigger teams. And so they are suddenly a top 10 defensive rebound team. Takes a lot of stress off of the Thunder enthusiasts. So appreciate the question, Dom. Steve, did you have any closing thoughts there, or are we good to move?
No, you're good.
Okay, good stuff, sir. Next, we're going to come from Michael. Who says, hey, Nikias and Steve, hello. Love the pod, especially as someone with a long commute to work. Something that you guys have talked about recently is whether or not the Clippers have the requisite front court guys to go small. While I was a fan of the James Harden trade, I felt that the Clippers would definitely miss Nicholas Batum, Robert Covington, and Marcus Morris, with Ty Lue's preference for going small in crunch time. I thought Batum's ability to space, playoff advantages, and credibly defend 1-5 was critical for these lineups. When the trade first happened, it felt like Norm Powell's scoring and downhill ability were somewhat redundant with the other guys on the roster, and my 2K brain thought they should look to move him for a front court player that could help unlock more small ball lineups. However, it's been clear all year they've really needed his pop off the bench. If you had to pick between Powell and Batum to maximize this version of the Clippers, who would you pick and why?
Well, I think in a perfect world, the Clippers would have loved to keep Nick Batum, despite some people questioning him in the fourth quarter. But that is the cost of doing business, Nikias. I think it is a little ironic because the last couple of years we've had conversations and we've mentioned the Clippers' small ball versatility and how those lineups can play a factor in the playoffs. We also always were like, how is Ty Lue going to figure out which person to play? And now we're in a spot with, to a degree, less options. And he's still trying to figure out how is Ty Lue going to figure out which guy to play. To answer the question, Michael, I would still go with Norman Powell. I do think that his scoring and the versatility of his scoring, where he can be spaced, he can drive closeouts, he can get in the paint, operate in pick and roll or off screens or off handoffs, self-create. That's really important next to Kawhi, Paul George, and James Harden. That gives you a really strong four. And it's not necessarily a disrespect to Batum, but he always felt like the person you wanted to be the fifth guy to a degree. Mm-hmm. And so if it was, say, the big three plus Batum and Mann, you probably like Batum's short role. But what if teams just start switching? Now he's going to have to make X amount of shots. Is it still just going to be two help points by default? That's where my mind kind of goes offensively. And I think defensively, it's a big plus. But you still have Paul George and Kawhi to be able to handle a lot of that. So I think Powell gives you a higher ceiling to a degree. Mm-hmm. I think the key for me for the Clippers is still going to be who is the fifth, whether they go small, whether they go big. Can they find themselves in a comfortable position on either side of it? And you feel good about your bigs, depending on the matchup, whatever you need from them defensively or offensively. And you feel good about the ability to go small. And mm-hmm. you feel good whether it's Terrence Mann or Amir Coffey or even PJ Tucker. I think that's one of the more important things they kind of have to work through during this stretch to close the season to make sure, okay, we know the highs, we know the lows, we know where to go during these moments. Mm-hmm. But it's Powell for me.
Got you. I ultimately landed on Powell. I think I was a little closer to Batum just because I do appreciate the pressure that he was able to take off of Kawhi and Paul George, you know, when fully healthy and stuff, defensively and adding to the switchability of that unit. In just general, he is also just bigger than Norm Powell, so you get a little bit more size there. But I do think in light of just how important the shooting, both in terms of efficiency and also the volume that you get from Norm Powell, and then just the added rim pressure. Like, I think he serves as a real complement to Kawhi and Paul George, and like now this year specifically James Harden. He is a guy that if you do get a Kawhi post up, you double the ball swings. Norm Powell can credibly knock down a catch and shoot jumper or get all the way into the teeth of the defense to finish for himself, get to the line, or kick it out and keep the chains moving. And Batum, I think, is a better decision maker against advantages, but he doesn't give you the same pop getting to the rim. And like, you know, I value the getting to the rim portion. And so like, I slightly lean Powell just because I feel like he could kind of puncture the advantages that Kawhi or Paul George create. In a more aggressive manner. And just to quickly put a number on it, the big three plus Norm Powell this year, a plus 35.8 net rating in 408 possessions per clean the glass. They have been blitzing teams with those four on the court. And so we will see how that holds up defensively in the playoffs when we get there. But I will lean Norm Powell right now. Next one is going to come from Jose, who says a lot of Mavs fans want Mikal Bridges to be paired with Luka and Kyrie. If Bridges is unavailable, who do you think would be the best fit to slide into the three spot? I think they desperately need a point of attack defender, despite PJ Washington being versatile.
I'm going to be honest, Nikias, and good question, Jose. I'm going to be honest. Mm-hmm. I feel like every single time we get a question from a Dallas Mavericks fan about this, they are looking to get Dorian Finney-Smith back without saying Dorian Finney-Smith. Every time he fits the descriptor, every single time. Anyway,
it's such a good bit.
It's funny. I'm so sorry. I think for me, I don't even know how they would get Bridges. Number one, I think the issue is you'd love to have a third during this Luka Kyrie era. How do you get it? The tricky part is because of how good Luka is and the current style of play for Dallas around Luka. No matter what person you get, they are going to have to hit certain notes on both mm-hmm. ends of the floor. So while you might want a point of attack defender, you probably need someone who can guard multiple positions. On the other end of the floor, they're going to have to knock down shots. They're going to have to be able to make defenses pay. They're going to have to be able to drive closeouts. The positive is you can get to this plug and play element where you know what works. The negative is, if they are not hitting shots or they're not able to get paint touches, it's very loud and you can see, okay, what is happening when the ball goes to X mm-hmm. or teams are just helping off this person. What do we do? So I think there's a contrast and a context where I don't even know if it's a specific player for me. They just have to fit a specific role. I think that's the trickiest part for Dallas. I think it's hard because we've seen the lows of it to a degree. To where, you know, you're trying Josh Green, you try Grant Williams, trying Derrick Jones Jr. You're trying to find that person to literally just do those things, mm-hmm. but you need them to do all of them. And we've seen what happens when they do. You have that success, you have that run. So I think I don't necessarily have a person for it because that's a very specific context to be able to succeed in.
I would say from Dallas's perspective, especially since they've already traded for PJ, traded for Daniel Gafford, so more picks are just out the door for them. Like, I think ideally for them, Josh Green or Omax just becomes that guy. Like, I think they want the internal growth there for one of those guys to be able to fill that spot. But if you are looking outside, like, because, again, they've sent out first and stuff like that, like, I don't think they have a real chance to get a Mikal Bridges. So I think he's going to be unavailable by default. And that's before getting into, we just had the conversation earlier this week about Mikal Bridges. Like, I don't think Brooklyn wants to move him anyway. So, like, on both sides, I don't think he's available. Dorian Finney-Smith would, again, be a very funny option. I think he would help. I think you have to think of options that you could, quote-unquote, save, or teams that may be willing to sell off these guys. They aren't a super part of the core. So, like, if Atlanta is still in money-shaving mode, if we have some real movement this offseason, call about DeAndre Hunter, just because it's probably not going to cost as much to get him asset-wise. Like, DeAndre Hunter could be a guy that you could take a flyer on. Because I'll toss this to you. I think there'll have to be some matching salaries and stuff. But what do you do with, like, a Tim Hardaway Jr. for Jonathan Isaac plus something deal?
Who's replacing Tim Hardaway Jr.'s scoring?
Are you, well, I guess you have free agency to try to find some bargain men guys to score more, or is it just, hey, Jaden Hardy, we know you can get buckets. It's your time in year three.
Could be. I mean, if you believe in Jaden Hardy to that degree, I can understand that thinking. I guess for me, the defense is the difference, but offensively, are teams going to treat Jonathan Isaac any different than they treat Maxi Kleber or Josh Green or Derrick Jones Jr. when spaced?
Probably not. I guess now, the only...
I was going to tell the flip side is, are you banking on Jonathan Isaac doing more of the Maxi Kleber things?
I think there's room there, because I think pre-insert injuries here, I suppose. Like, there was some legitimate intrigue with what he was doing off the bounce as a driver. And so if you believe that Luka draws to, they're helping off of Jonathan Isaac, but he could puncture that as a driver in a way that maybe DJJ couldn't or Maxi Kleber couldn't, then you can kind of scheme around that enough. And then just the defensive impact there would just be insane. So it might be worth the bet for them. But again, this is going to be a guy that I don't think Jonathan Isaac is going to cost you a first or two firsts or anything like that. So, like, that's where I think he fits in the mold of, we can take the flyer on this dude. It's not going to be the perfect solution, but he should fit within the asset pool that we should be able to put him up. I'm trying to think, is there anyone else? Like, I guess for younger guys, like, Denny has probably just played himself out of this conversation with what he's done in Washington this year. So, like, I don't think that would be someone they could reasonably acquire with the assets that they have. Do you call up Portland for one of the wings? Do you call up Portland and see, wait, what would you want from Matisse Thybulle?
Matisse would be a good fit. I think I would like that deal. It's a good name.
Do you call up New Orleans? Or I guess just in free agency, do you just see what Najee Marshall is going to cost? Can you get him for the MLE?
Najee's not bad. Yes. Do you trust the shot with Najee?
Probably not enough to not get, you know, gapped offensively. At least when it's, we helping on this Luka driver, leaving you open, we just going to leave you open type feet. He probably doesn't cross that threshold. But I think he can knock down enough open ones. Off top, I guess I quickly look this up. Like, how many more years does Robert Covington have? Like, is he your veteran flyer that you take in the offseason? I mean, this is the pool you're drawing from, I believe, if you're Dallas. Like, I just don't think they have enough for Mikal, unless they are putting, like, literally everything on the table. Green, Omax, Hardy, whatever first you have left, plus salary fit. Like, even then, like, I feel like you could just get outbid if someone else wants Mikal, if that's the bid. But
hey,
what's up?
Got a question for you, Nikias.
What's up?
Is the answer just Taurean Prince?
Tell you what, let Laker fans tell you, they will drive him to the airport themselves.
Oh.
He would help with the shooting portion. He's certainly not going to be wing stopper. I guess the hope there is that he just hits, like, the PJ threshold or slightly below, where you just have size, you are competent, and the shooting outweighs on the other end. But I would imagine he's probably attainable, or will be. So that's a name to consider.
It's just Taurean Prince and Marcus Morris time.
Oh. Well, I guess they got A Morris. They might as well bring it. All right. Well, unless you have any buzzer beating names to toss out, we can move to the next one. All right. Next, I'm going to come from Matt, who says, hello. Cavs fan here, longtime listener, first time question asker. I am curious about Evan Mobley's development and what aspects of his game has stood out to you guys. I know he's young and still has plenty of time to grow his game, but what things have you noticed that you've liked, and what areas are you still looking for more improvement? I remember early on, his screening was something that was mentioned as an area that needs growth. Thanks for sharing your hoop knowledge with the world.
I think for me, even if the results have been mixed, it's really starting to feel more decisive for Evan Mobley. And I find it interesting when you look at Nekias, obviously, you know, he's only played X amount of games, but 15, 10, and a block, some pretty elite company of players that do that, Nekias. You know what I mean? We're talking like Anthony Davis, Giannis, Bam. It's not easy to do that, especially when you're doing it along someone else and Jared Allen, who's also doing the same thing. So I understand where we're at as far as, hey, what's going on? But I think Evan Mobley's progressing in the right way. I think the biggest part for me is how he's playing next to Jared Allen and feeling more decisive next to Jared Allen and being able to grow in that role. I think that's important because that's going to unlock what Cleveland can do in theory. I think you felt a little bit more of those quick decisions when he's spaced, when he's going to catch and shoot, when he's going to catch and drive. Even if you close short, he's looking to attack the gap and get into the paint and try and finish. One of the things I've really liked is his cutting when he's spaced.
Yeah.
And when teams are helping off of him, especially in the corner, he's done a really good job of reading that and finding his lanes. And that's been a big plus. And I think him being able to have a better feel for what's needed with Jared Allen, and you combine that with the minutes where he's playing the five and he can show off the rim running in transition, he can roll the post play, that can be a plus. I think the footwork and the patience have still moved in the right direction. And I think you open up a door where, especially when he's at the five and he's mixing in, when does he pop? When does he roll hard? When does he stay in the pocket for a pocket pass? That's really good nuance and touch from Evan Mobley. So those are positive things. And the other thing I've really liked is the work he's done passing the ball, especially some of the interior passes to Jared Allen, catch on the short roll. He's been able to find Jared Allen in different pockets without even thinking about it twice. Those reads have felt a lot stronger and easier for him to make. And some of the times where Cleveland's playing through him at the top of the key, where they're running delay action, or they've got movement and cutting around him, some of the passing he's been able to make from there shows a little bit potential as a hub. So it'd be fun to see Cleveland tap into that more. But overall, I think it's just, you know, you want the shooting to improve. You want the physicality to continue to grow in the right direction. That's about it for me.
Okay. I like it. You pretty much nailed everything that I wanted to hit on. Like, I think just the general decisiveness in the field off ball have probably been the broad strokes things that I've enjoyed the most. And just to go into like the physicality portion, like we've talked a lot about this with Jared Allen, the way that he's embraced physicality as a finisher. He is putting his shoulder into more chest this year. I think Evan Mobley has also done a better job of that. It feels like his drives are both more decisive and more forceful when he's been able to get a catch on the perimeter and get downhill. So like that's felt better for me. I think he's doing a better job of absorbing contact both as a driver and also when he's defending post-ups, when he's defending drives from these power wings. Like he can still be moved just because of the frame, but I do think he's holding up better and he's getting the extra challenge from there when he is contesting shots. I'm glad you hit on the passing. The jumper is legit better, both in terms of the efficiency and even just looking at the mechanics of it. It does feel like it comes out of his hands quicker. It feels less rigid when he is loading up for the jumper. And so it's one of those things that I guess fits into both parts to the question. I've seen the growth with the jumper. You also just want to see more growth with that jumper, because if he does become a legitimate stretch threat, or even if he just becomes a reliable, if we run a, you know, a lower angled pick and roll, you pop out to 18, 19 feet. If you can just knock that down comfortably, not the most quote unquote analytically sound shot, but if it's something that he can just get to whenever he wants to, and teams have to at least think about, okay, we can't just let him be comfortable out there. That turns into a pump in one or two dribbles on the drive and get downhill. That just opens up another way for him to attack on the face up. So if you can build the boat off of that, that'd be cool. Defensively, he feels even better mirroring guys in space, which sounds hard to do considering what he looked like last year. But like the defense does just feel better. Like I think if he was able to stay healthy this year, he very much would have been on an all defense team at minimum, if not a major factor into the DPOY race. So like it does stink from that perspective that he's missed as much time as he has. He's just not going to be eligible for stuff this year. But I do feel like the defense has gotten better. To the screening portion, like I have felt better about the screening when watching him this year. So it was kind of funny to look up some of the screening stats that I was using for screen time and stuff like that. And seeing like he's, screen content rate is actually down this year than last year. And like the die on screen percentage is actually down from last year. But it does feel like the footwork is better. He's holding a little bit more when he does get contact. So even if it isn't a full wipeout on the screen, like he's at least forcing the guy to navigate in a different way. So like I've seen the improvement. You want to see that keep going. I think that probably does it. Like I feel like Evan Mobley is just a better player. So you just want to see him continue again. With the decisiveness, you don't want that to go backwards in a playoff setting. So we'll see what that looks like. And the jumper, again, you just want to see that continue to grow. But he feels stronger. He feels more physical. He's grown as a rebounder as well. Because I'll toss that in as well. Like the per game numbers show it. But again, doing better getting contested rebounds when he was on the floor. The box out's not getting moved out the way as easily because he's a little bit stronger. So. That's a thumbs up for me right now with Evan Mobley. Just want him to get healthy and stay healthy. Next one's going to come from our guy Don Tizzle from the Watch Party, who says, I was talking with a coworker and they said they think the Bulls could be okay with trading Patrick Williams if Julian Phillips and Dalen Terry continue to grow. I think it's plausible, but it feels like we've been waiting so long for Williams and this season he's starting to take those steps. What do you guys think? And as always, thanks for the content, especially the watch parties that everyone should join. I appreciate the promo at the end of the question there. But your thoughts on Patrick Williams and Chicago potentially moving off of him?
I think it's a tricky spot for Chicago. And I think it's mainly, obviously, you don't want injuries. You don't want that. I think you would have wished to see more answers, especially with this group, with LaVine being out. The tricky part for Chicago is Patrick Williams was starting to show the flashes and he was able to show some more of the vision that you've been waiting on and banking on for him to continue to grow with. The other tricky part is you just kind of did the same thing with Kobe White, where you knew what Kobe White was. You knew the potential. You still had question marks. And now he's been able to do more than probably you expected. Mm-hmm. Do you now take the same risk with Patrick Williams to a degree? And bank on that improvement you've seen growing even more. And that helps you going forward. Mm-hmm. And if you have to pivot, you eventually pivot, but you don't pivot right now. Because while you could be okay, at the same time, you will lose Patrick Williams and you re-enter that cycle with a new player. Even if there's a stronger fit. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's a tough part to balance from an organizational perspective. To where there's at least a known quantity about Patrick Williams, as opposed to, are we just starting over from scratch? Mm-hmm.
I guess for me, like, if you zoom out, it's going to be funny watching the Vooch extension and then likely something with DeMar DeRozan, considering where the Bulls are right now, like the playoff picture and all the good stuff. And then Patrick Williams is like, well, actually, no, we're okay with him. We're not paying him as he hits restricted free agency. Someone can throw out enough money. We're not going to match. We have these younger guys in the room. And it's just like, even if you get it, because like, obviously I think like Vooch and DeMar is, or at least definitely DeMar, but likely both of those guys are better than Patrick Williams, stuff like that. But like conceptually, we're giving up on this guy, but we want to keep these vets in that have this ceiling. It's just interesting to me. With that being said, I wouldn't be super shocked if the Bulls got there. I would just probably disagree with it. Because to your point, like he has shown the flashes. Like I feel like the last 2 years on the pod, I've been saying, hey, like lower the keys, you could probably put Patrick Williams and like you at least put him on the long list or the medium list for all defense with what he's doing. He shot 40% from three. You still want the volume to tick up. Like you think they've been waiting for consistent aggression with him. And as we talked about earlier this year, like it's not super ideal that he's kind of had to toggle between starter and bench unit to try to find comfort for him the last couple of years. So I can see where the hesitation comes in. And if there is a team that's willing to give him, I don't know, four for 85 or something like that. I can see where Chicago's like, do we really believe he's going to hit the levels that we think he can consistently, considering what the rest of our books look like? So I can get there. I guess for me, I just need to see more from Julian Phillips and Dalen Terry. I do think to the aggression point offensively, like, I don't think you have to worry about will they take the shot, will they take the drive in the same way that you've had to worry about with Patrick Williams sometimes. And I think with Phillips in particular, you can kind of see, hey, this dude should be a good defender moving forward. Does he hit the heights of Patrick Williams defensively? I don't know yet. Again, I just want to watch more so I can have a firmer answer for you and for myself moving forward. I think you get Patrick Williams back on something friendly for you. And if all else fails, then you can just move Patrick Williams a little bit later. I don't know if I would just punt on that right now. Now, I say that for someone that's on the outside. If there are some medical red flags because of these recent injuries that they know about that I don't, then by all means, move in that direction if you feel like that's okay. But from what I know, like, I would, can we get Patrick Williams for four for 60? And if it doesn't pop, then this is a mid-sized salary you can use to get something else in the room in a year or two. I think that's how I would go about that. Next question is going to come from Grant, who asked, or who says, thanks for an amazing podcast that makes me laugh and makes me think, which is all I could ever want as a coach and fan of the game. Well, thank you for listening. I love your thoughts on this idea for the NBA All-Star Game. Assuming the league increases the money for the players who participate in the game, what if the winning team got to stay on the court for the next game, the next year, like it works for a pickup game? You could still have injury replacements, and you could bring back the draft, comedy ratings goal, but that approach might appeal more to the players' inherent sense of competitiveness, and it will guarantee them another, hopefully, big payout. What other details would need to be included in order for something like this to work, or does the injury risk and overall toll of the game require a more creative fix, like the Pro Bowl shifting to flag football? Thanks again for making all the plays.
I like that. Appreciate you, Grant. Here's my thing with that portion. My mind immediately went to, this would be handled irresponsibly by some people. Mm. And how does that stifle the growth or opportunity for someone who has now elevated themselves into an all-star caliber year, but now they can't make it because the East won last year?
Yeah.
So that part gets tricky for me. Mm-hmm. Logically, I was like, well, that'd be kind of a bummer. Two, it's an honor and a privilege to be an all-star. Does it feel different if you just know you're going? Like, well, see you guys next year.
Yeah.
And then when we do all this all-star snub content, and let's say player X has gone from averaging 20 and 10 to 13 and 6. You know, are you gonna feel like they should still be there? Mm-hmm. No disrespect. So I like the idea because I like just like defending your turf to a degree. I just don't know if you can carry it over from year to year because of some of those elements. I think for me, it's going to take someone is going to have to grab the reins of this and say, I'm going out here and doing this. You know? There has to be that person to where I'm here to compete. I'm here to take heads off. We're just going to keep going. But I think, again, the game has shifted so much where guys want to stay healthy and the play style is so different to where so many different guys can just knock down all these incredible shots that you're just kind of crossing your fingers that people keep it close. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then that way we can get to the portion where, okay, now we actually are playing defense. Everyone rises, claps. Ah, can't get to that if everyone's made 93s and you're down 20. Now it's like, all right, bet.
Do we need a three-point limit in the All-Star game? Is that just actually the bit?
Nah, I don't think we need a three-point limit. I just think if we can get a close one, it'll be all right. If we can just get a close one, it'll be okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe bring more money by quarter or something like that, and try and incentivize it that way to keep it close. I don't know.
I mean, like in the current system, I think moving forward, it's probably just going to be more money involved since there already been talks there. But I'd bet like the winners just get more money than the losers in the All-Star game. Do you raise the pool and then let's say the East win by 10? Does the Eastern Conference start with a 10-point lead next year's game? Does that juice the competitiveness at all as you're playing for more money and now you're coming in with a 10-point deficit? Like, now we got to get them off. We got to get them out of here. Like, I think you would have to cap it because if you just have, like, the bad All-Star game, Team East or Team West wins by 38. Like, obviously, I don't think you should start 38 to nothing in the next game. But, like, if you cap it at 15 – and whatever the winning point differential is in this game carries over to next year with a 15-point cap. and you have the heightened winning earnings and stuff. Like, is that something they could consider? This is something I literally thought about like 45 seconds ago. So there may just be inherent holes to this, but like,
I'm not about to hold your feet to the fire on this. Like you said, the Pelicans would rather leave Donovan Mitchell open than Isaac Okoro. I wouldn't do that to you on this. We're going to circle back to that at some point.
Okoro shooting better from the corners than Mitchell is above the... Okay, anyway, continue.
You want to point that out? Nikias. Donovan Mitchell is taking only 20 corner threes.
That is unfortunate.
All of his threes are above the break three.
Correct.
No, Nikias is correct, sir. Undefeated. Anyways. undefeated. I would say that could help. I need a generation to get this done.
It's just going to be Wimby. It's just going to be Wimby. He's going to be the guy that cares enough. Which it does just feel inherently unfair. It's like Wimby's just going to solve all these problems. He's just going to be the next basketball messiah and all this good stuff.
Nah, we need Wimby talking slick. Need a 1 hour special where Wimby just talks slick to all the all-stars.
Let him cut the promo.
How does he do it, by the way?
Victor Wimbenyama.
Yeah, Rudy. Yeah, nice. That's a good one. Man told Rudy Gobert, I hope he wins it this year, because after that,
it's cooked. And he's mine. Man, shoot, man, it might be. I can't even. It's going back to the draft. It's like, you know, this guy would be the number one prospect, but I didn't exist. It's like, oh, he was right. Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness. But yeah, so I'm just, I do understand. I think the whole, the court thing would just have to work if they shift to like a, because what, 24 all-stars. So like if it's four teams of six and they do like a round robin type thing, like I think that's the only way that you could really get a, you hold the court type situation going. Because the carryover to the next year, like one that I think we've talked about, like if a guy on the East just gets traded over the offseason to a Western Conference team, like what are we doing with that? Since we just went back to the East-West format. Or signs elsewhere in free agency. Like I feel like that just gets dicey. Unless you're going to do full all-star game and then the winner, you pick five or whatever, and then they face last year's team who won or whatever like that. But that just extends the event so long, and you're already trying to get the guys to play hard in the original All-Star game. If you're adding an extra game on the Sunday, or even if you're doing like a Saturday showcase into like All-Star weekend, or you know, into the skills competition, all that good stuff, like that just feels like, I don't know, like in a vacuum it's not a lot, but it is a lot considering these players have events and they just, you know, all these regular season games, all the good stuff. So like I don't think you could sell them on something like that. 2K tournament? Question mark.
That's, I like, so we, that. That's fun.
We can introduce some fun on some of this stuff, but yeah. To the heart of the question, Grant, I would also like to just see a more competitive All-Star game. I feel you. Like the fact that all these ideas are being tossed out is a testament to kind of where we're at. So I do feel you. And hopefully something comes of it.
They can't do it, but it would be neat if in like Olympic years they could do like the W, do Team USA against the WNBA All Stars.
It'd be fire,
but they can't.
Is it all just solved if Ant just like cares about the All Star game? Is that the bit?
I feel like they would have to like they wouldn't be able to do it format wise, but like what if you just put like the. Put ages up on it, like the old against the youth.
That'd be a fun one. Just get LeBron, KD, Steph.
Yeah.
What would you set the bar at? Cause like 32 and up,
it would get very, very tricky. Very, very tricky.
We just get three teams of eight, up to 27. We go 28 to 32, and then 32 plus. Which also, well, I guess that would just stink if there's just only like LeBron and KD and Steph.
Yeah, maybe that's just like tied to like years of service or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Yeah. The brain's turning now, so we've done it. Next one's going to come from Jason, who has a couple for us. We have a start one, bench one, trade one. We have two of these. The first one features Lauri Markkanen, Domantas Sabonis, and Bam Adebayo.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, real dunker hours.
Real dunker hours. Good night. That is disgusting.
Oh yeah, man.
Starting Bam, I'm benching Domantas, I'm trading Lauri. It's about the easiest way I could do it.
I think we have the same order. I ain't gonna hold you. I'm kind of quibbling between like the Lauri and the Domantas thing. Cause I feel like Lauri might I feel like Lauri will have more trade value. It's kind of the bit. So I'm just like,
well, I thought you was going to do on-court defense or something. That man said trade value.
Well, I'm just saying this is the exercise. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, even if I feel better about like Lauri in a team context, it's like, am I getting more for Domantas? I mean, I guess after this year where he's like, it's him, Wilt, and Oscar with, what is it, 63 plus double doubles and 23 plus triple doubles in a season? I think was the graphic shown.
Yeah.
That's freaking insane. What a season he's had. I hope more than anything, like even if the Kings don't have like a deep run, I hope Sabonis averages like 23 and 15 in the playoffs. I don't want him to have this year and then it's like 17 and 10. And he shoots 58% from the field, which would objectively be good numbers, but be an obvious dip from where he was this year. Like, I don't want that for him.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
What if Domantas Sabonis averages 23 to 15, but two assists?
Then we yelling at Harrison Barnes and Kevin Herter. And...
Okay, can we trip into something here real quick?
What's up?
Just in typical dunker spot style.
What you got?
They're currently the sixth seed, right?
Mm-hmm.
The top three are OKC, Denver, and Minnesota. They would be currently be slated to play Minnesota.
Oh.
Are there any of those teams that are not going to try the let's play off Domantas Sabonis on the perimeter route?
No.
Okay. Can I slip a power rank in here?
Sure.
Who do you believe in Domantas Sabonis driving and trying to hit them in the chest most? Jokic, Rudy, or Chet?
So trust, you know, the highest trust in Domantas? Mm-hmm. If that's the case, it's probably Chet's going to be number one, all due respect. Gotcha. Chet, Rudy, Jokic. With like Rudy obviously being a better defender than Jokic, but Jokic is just a tank. And so if like that's just going to be the style, like I think he could hold up on those. Which, I mean, I say that conceptually. I should just look up like what Sabonis has put up against Denver this year. So I don't sound like I'm just talking completely outside of my neck. But like at least thinking it through is just like, it feels more likely that
there's nothing wrong with talking out.
What has he done against Denver this year? Live dunker spot lookup. 16.8 points. So against Denver this year, four games, 16.8 points, 49% from the field overall, a 53.8 true shooting percentage. Hold on. Against Minnesota, 17.7 points, 51.2% from the field overall, a 55.2 true shooting percentage. And then against OKC, 18.7 points, roughly 56% from the field overall, a 58.5 true shooting percentage in those three games. So that would quite literally track if that's the bit. So I feel much better about what I have said. That's what the heck I'm talking about.
That's funny. All right, let's get back to Jason and Jason's mess that he threw at us.
Sorry, Jason. One for us.
Could it get any worse?
Yeah. Au contraire. Start one, bench one, trade one. Jason Tatum, Devin Booker, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Aha, it can.
It can and it will.
No. Oh, there's no good answer here now, isn't there?
Oh, Lord.
Put Jason in the Dunker Spot Hall of Fame. My good God, man. Start Shay. Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, man.
Bench Tatum trade Devin Booker. I don't feel good about any of that. Oh. I'm pulled in the Caius. My out is just the MVP vote.
Well, I'll make you feel better, Steve. I'm starting Shay. I'm benching Tatum. I'm also trading Devin Booker. If you look at their availability over it, no, I'm just kidding. I ain't gonna do you like that. But man, it's just is Booker the oldest of the three? I think he's the oldest of the three. Yeah, Shea 25, Tatum's 26, Booker's 27. I'm afraid I got some bad news for you, Mr. Booker. All due respect. That's tough, though. That's really tough.
Is Jason, there any in this answer?
Hmm?
I said, is there any in this answer? Is there any respect in this answer?
Doesn't feel like it. Which is a great transition into our final question coming from Ricky, who says to rank these players: Kyrie Irving, Tyrese Maxey, Paul George, Jaylen Brown, Jaylen Williams, the wing, to be clear, Pascal Siakam, Bam Adebayo, Rudy Gobert, Domantas Sabonis, and Karl Anthony Towns.
All in one?
A 10 player rank them to close it out.
Ricky. Tricky Ricky. All right. Started from the bottom, now we here. I'm going to go Rudy at the bottom.
Tough.
I'm then going to go Jaylen Williams.
Jaylen over Rudy. Tyrese already.
I'm going to go Tyrese Maxey.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like this question.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yikes. We're in trouble. I'm going to go Pascal Siakam. Then we're going to go Kyrie.
Mm-hmm.
Jaylen Brown. Wait a minute.
Bro, hey, hold on a minute, please.
This is too many people. This is entirely too many people. I'm going to go Sabonis after Siakam. Then I'm going to go Kyrie. Oh, this is a disgusting question. Oh, I dislike everything about this right now.
Yeah, it don't feel good. Not this.
No, because here's the thing. You lose no matter who you put at the top. I just realized this halfway through.
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, you know what? I'll go.
Hey, is this just the best second player on the team rankings? Is that just what this is?
Okay. You know what? Nope, we feel good. We feel good about this. Live listing. All right, are you ready, Ricky?
Are you ready, Steve? That's the real question.
Hey, by the way, off is the direction that you can go, all right, bud?
That's crazy.
We're going to go Rudy.
This is from the bottom up,
Jaylen
right?
Williams. Yeah, bottom up. Okay. Rudy, Jaylen Williams, Tyrese Maxey, Pascal Siakam, Kat, Domantas Sabonis, Kyrie, Bam Adebayo, Paul George, Jaylen Brown.
Ooh, Jaylen at the top of the list. Hey.
Man is cooking.
Okay. That is. Hey. Okay.
Yeah, let's see how much fun you have with it, bud.
Oh Lord. Yeah, it's kind of.
Yeah.
It's tough. Yeah. It's really tough.
Yeah, they squabbling.
Yeah, it's certainly tough. I ain't gonna hold you. I guess I will do it up for the big men here with my list. From the top down. And all due respect to all of these wonderful basketball players. I think highly of all of them with their on-court impact. But anyway, we're going Bam, Sabonis, Paul George, Jaylen Brown, Karl Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert, Kyrie, Pascal, Tyrese Maxey, Jaylen Williams.
Give that to me one more time. You had DeMontis Sabonis where?
Had him too for what he's done this year. But
are you okay?
I'm good. I feel like the player rankings than the playoff rankings are different rankings. And I feel like I have like a mix in here. But either way, Bam, Sabonis, PG, Jaylen, Cat, Rudy, Kyrie, Pascal, Maxey, and Jaylen Williams.
Jaylen is
taking names and all this good stuff.
Okay. All right. Who's got a better All-NBA case, Bam or Sabonis?
Sabonis this year.
So shouldn't Sabonis be number one?
No. I don't think Sabonis is a better player overall than Bam.
Well, I'm a little confused.
Me too, Steve. Me too. It's a live list.
What do you mean by that, Nikias?
I think Bam is better than Sabonis.
So you have Bam over Sabonis, but Sabonis on All-NBA, but not Bam.
I mean, yeah. Like, Sabonis has played more games than Bam. He's doing the offense. He's had a better offensive season than Bam. I believe the Kings are just having a better season than the Heat at this point. So I think the All-NBA case is going to favor Sabonis. But if we are doing like a center draft, I am taking Bam over Sabonis. Okay. And
Paul George or Jaylen Brown? Who's having a better season?
Jaylen's probably having a... Yeah, I think Jaylen's having a better season.
I'm intrigued. I feel like you have those two names flipped.
Yep. But, you know. I think Jaylen has also. I believe Jaylen has also played more than PG. PG's been a little bit more inconsistent this year.
Do you have free throws? Oh my God.
You know, I'm just, you know, doing the best that I can, Steve.
Hey, Nikias.
What's up?
Nikias, go to your front door. I sent some shame right to your front door. Go find it.
Sorry, bud. I'm allergic. But I only have a few for you. Steve, what's your favorite March Madness memory?
My favorite March Madness memory?
Yes.
Just overall?
Yeah. Or memories, if you want to.
Watching Oregon as a youth was very fun. Mm. Fred Jones, Luke Jackson, Luke Ridenour. The UNLV run was very fun. I lost my only March Madness game to Ali Farouk Manesh. As every year, everyone brings up Northern Iowa, and I just got to sit there and take it.
Ah.
Sorry. Thanks, bud.
Sorry, man.
Pal, you are, friend.
Well, this is why I said your favorite ones.
Trauma.
Okay. Well, all right. Fair enough. My apologies. No, we haven't done real college talk on the pod, but are there any players that you're looking forward to seeing as we've now reached the tournament?
Jazz Shelley at Nebraska, Caitlin Clark, Haley Van Lith against Louisville.
Against Louisville specifically. I respect
that. That's all I got.
Okay. I respect that. And then just a two-parter to cap it off. Who's having a better season, Jared Allen or Rudy Gobert?
Rudy.
Okay. Who's the better player? Is that the same answer?
It's Rudy.
Okay. All right, that's all I have for you. Do you have free throws?
I don't anymore.
Anymore?
Hit the horn.
Hit the what? That's crazy. I'll quickly echo your sentiments on the women's side. Also, is South Carolina just going to hold somebody like 35 points in this tournament? Are we going to get one of those? Like they're open the game.
It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen right off the rip.
Yeah, I feel like we're gonna get some nastiness with that defense. Nastiness complimentary, but I think we're gonna get some nastiness with that South Carolina defense. Naturally, a lot of attention being shown to Caitlin Clark, rightfully so. We'll see what Juju does in the tournament. We'll see if Paige can lead the miracle run. So we'll see what happens there with old UConn. And then on the men's side, naturally, Stephon Castle, Donovan Clingan, and at UConn, see what they're going to do. I want to see what the Reed Shepherd and Rod Dillingham hype is about, since there seems to be a lot of talk between those two players in particular from the people that I follow that actually do draft stuff, as I do not. And I have seen Jamal Shedd's name thrown out a few times over the last couple of weeks. Apparently his defense is insane. So I want to see what that's about. That's probably all I got on the men's side. So we will see. With that, I will hit the horns.
Don't sleep on Hannah Hidalgo. Also, you started the pod by saying you're leaning the other way and then drop this list of college players.
Hey, I ain't about to, you know, I ain't about to have the party hats on, but it's going to flood the feed. I'm going to tap into some, you know. I'm just saying. This man done took the headphones. Dog, last year we did a full-blown, we did an all-day stream on college basketball. And buddy, that's a whole nother pod. This tourney time. We're going to see if UConn's going to get it done. We'll see what else pops of it there. But anyway, thank you for listening to this episode of the Donker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at TheKaiusNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Donker Spot community on Twitter if you haven't already. Join us for our online Donker Spot watch parties. If you would like to watch basketball with us and you have a League Pass subscription or an International League Pass subscription for our international listeners, you can watch games live with us. Real-time analysis, top-tier vibes. We're breaking things down during commercial breaks. We're answering basketball questions that you may toss up in the chat, or if you want to hop on stage with us to ask questions about basketball or whatever else, honestly, because we just talk about a little bit of everything in the watch party, you can do that. The link to the room should be hyperlinked in your podcast description. If so, just click on that link, set up your profile. It is free, no shenanigans. Again, all you're going to need is a League Pass subscription, and you are good to go to rock with us. And if it's not hyperlinked, the link should still just be in the description. So just copy and paste it into the browser, click on it from there, then set up your profile. Once again, it is free, no shenanigans. Every Tuesday, you can watch the pod on YouTube, on JJ Reddy's YouTube channel. So if you aren't subscribed to JJ Reddy's YouTube channel right now, go ahead and do that so you can check us out. We have plays spliced in over some of the things we're talking about. So if you want more individual element, or if you want to just see Steve look at me sideways when I say something bad, you can do that every Tuesday on JJ Reddy's YouTube channel. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Bye.